This year, United Airlines was forced into bankruptcy. A huge accounting scandal erupted at the telecommunications company WorldCom, and regulators began unraveling what happened at the energy trader Enron. Those stories had one thing in common. Each happened in an industry that's been deregulated. Over the past three decades, in one sector of the economy after another, the government has been steadily lifting price controls, breaking apart monopolies, and letting companies expand the kinds of business they can do. This week, Morning Edition will report on how deregulation has reshaped the U.S. economy. First, NPR's Jim Zaroli examines the roots of the movement.
At the Jevic trucking facility in the southern New Jersey town of Delanco, a worker is loading crates of tea onto a truck using a small forklift. He darts quickly and easily from one part of the loading dock to another. Jevic is one of the largest trucking companies in the nation with several thousand tractors and trailers, but company spokesman Pete Robinson says the company wouldn't exist today if the industry hadn't been deregulated in the late 1970s.
We wouldn't be here. We're a product of deregulation. We started because the opportunity was there to provide customized solutions for customers. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Jevic's growth is part of a much broader and more sweeping set of changes that have transformed the U.S. economy since about the early 1970s. At one time, state and federal governments played a much bigger role in regulating certain industries than they do today. Much of this regulation had begun during the Depression, when public confidence in the markets had plummeted. But within a few decades, economists at the University of Chicago and elsewhere were questioning whether government intervention had gone too far. Economist Robert Hormats is vice chairman at Goldman Sachs.
There was a generally held view that the government was more of a source of inefficiency than efficiency when it came to the heavy regulation of the economy that was basically a prevalent force in the 60s and part of the 70s, and that the very rapid pace of economic change meant that the government really couldn't keep up.
In aviation, for instance, the Federal Civil Aeronautics Board decided which airline could fly which route and how much it could charge per seat. Peter Van Doren of the Cato Institute says that if an airline wanted to add a route, it had to convince the board new service was needed.
And the CAB always seemed to find that there was no need, it wasn't in the public interest for newcomers to offer service on the routes that the incumbents already had. And so you entered the early 1970s with fares that were very high.
Van Doren notes that the CAB had no jurisdiction over flights between cities in the same state. As a result, the cost of flying between, say, Los Angeles and San Francisco was considerably lower than flying the same distance across state lines. By the mid-1970s, many people in Congress began to think seriously about easing price controls as a way of curbing inflation. Carter administration official Alfred Kahn, who is known as the father of deregulation, says much of the early opposition came from the airline industry itself and the pilots' union.
We always thought regulation was to protect the public from exploitation by the industry. Here it was the industry that wanted to be protected from the competition, and they were the almost sole defenders.
Kahn says that by contrast, leading Democrats such as Ted Kennedy and activists such as Ralph Nader saw deregulation as pro-consumer. Kahn says the movement started slowly but soon took on a momentum of its own.
Here are some more American Airlines superfares.
Freed from price controls, airlines began bragging about their discount fares.
$220 round trip. Save 40% round trip to almost any place we fly. And 50% to some night coach cities with American Airlines superfares.
Over time, airline fares would fall dramatically, making air travel possible for many more people. It was the same story in trucking. Before the 1970s, routes and prices were controlled by the Interstate Commerce Commission. Slowly, the restrictions were lifted. Pete Robinson of Jevic says that before deregulation, trucking companies could only really grow by acquiring other companies with multiple routes, and they often built up huge, costly networks of terminals and large transfer stations called break bulks. Robinson says newer companies have been much more innovative about the way they operate.
A customer can give me a piece of freight and say, you know what, I need that thing to deliver tomorrow. and I can just take that tractor trailer and take it right there for delivery. I don't have to go back to a facility in Jevic's network. I don't have to go, like the other networks, I don't have to go back to a terminal, to a break bulk, to a break bulk, to a terminal. No, I can just make the pickup and take it and run. You couldn't do that before 1981.
Robinson says deregulation has made trucking much more competitive. Once federal officials strictly controlled which company could serve a route, now anyone can try to take Jevic's business from a mom-and-pop carrier to its largest rival. The competition in trucking and aviation and in rail in the wake of deregulation has lowered shipping and inventory costs. And Peter Van Doren of the Cato Institute says that's been a boon for the economy. Van Doren says one reason Walmart has succeeded is its highly efficient inventory system, due in part to transportation deregulation.
In the 70s and 60s, a fair amount of U.S. capital, believe it or not, was just tied up in inventory costs. And that now is dramatically lower than it used to be. And all that capital that used to go just to pay the carrying costs and the interest costs on stores' inventories has been freed up to do other things. One of the key ingredients in freeing up that capital for inventory costs has been the tremendous productivity changes in rail and trucking freight systems.
In the years that followed, deregulation proponents would move on to other industries, such as telecommunications and banking, where the results would be more mixed, and the consumers who were supposed to benefit from the movement would sometimes be less than pleased with the changes it produced. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.